Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, for many of us, thankfully, the only experience we ever have of explosions is at a fireworks display. We just don't give it a second thought. They make noise, they look nice, it's simple. Except that it's anything but simple when you look that little bit closer. Explosives is a complicated field in more ways than one, and the research that comes from the scientists involved could have impacts on everything from geopolitics to space exploration to Antarctic research. Jackie Akhavan is a professor of explosive chemistry and head of the Center for Defense Chemistry at Cranfield Defense and Security. She joins me now. Jackie, let's start with the basics. What exactly is an explosion?
Well, there's three types of explosions. There's a nuclear one, and that's a really powerful explosion where it has huge amounts of infrared and gamma radiation and a lot of blast produced. There's a physical explosion, and that's something like when you might have a metal container and you're heating up water in that metal container, but you don't allow the steam to escape and you carry on heating it, and then eventually the metal container will rupture and you're going from that very hot liquid and it will change into steam. So we call that change of state, and you'll hear a big loud bang. That's a physical explosion. And the ones you're talking about, fireworks, that's a chemical explosion where you get a chemical reaction taking place, and the products of that chemical reaction are gases, and the reaction is so fast and it gives out a lot of gases at really high pressure that the gases can actually do some damage. So that's sort of what an explanation of an explosion actually is.
When I think of explosions, I think of fire, and that's probably due to watching a lot of Knight Rider and A-Team when I was younger. But is fire necessary for an explosion?
If you have something like a firework, we call them a pyrotechnic, they will produce sometimes coloured flames, and sometimes they might produce a whistler. So pyrotechnics may produce a coloured flame. Propellants, and they're the ones that actually will, say, lift the space shuttle up into the sky, you often get a flame from them as well, a very fierce flame, and sometimes you hear it hissing when you see it on television. A very powerful flame, whereas a high explosive, and these are ones that actually detonate, there's no flame. You sometimes see a very white flash, and that's simply hot gases at such a high temperature, they're emitting white light, but there's no flame with high explosives.
Wow. How is that? How are those explosions created?
The way it works with high explosives is that there's two types of high explosives. There's a primary one and there's a secondary. The primary is extremely sensitive, and that's the one, if you just touch it or a bit of heat or electrical current, it will go off. And what happens is when you initiate a primary explosives, it's called a burn front. It burns so, so fast, it becomes supersonic. And when the speed of the burn rate becomes supersonic, it sets up a shockwave. So it's a shockwave going through the explosive, and the shockwave being the speed of sound, of course. So it's a shockwave that's greater than the speed of sound through the solid material, the explosive. It's a shockwave compressing the chemicals together. And as they compress them, they cause the molecules to heat up to really high temperatures. And as you heat them up, it's causing the composition to degrade, which gives the gases. And primary explosives are very sensitive to that, where secondary explosives, again, you put a shockwave through them and they will decompose, but the shockwave must be supersonic for detonation to occur.
Wow, so it's all down to the shockwave. Let's talk about fireworks for a second, and maybe you might take us through the ingredients of a good firework. How do you build one step by step then?
Okay, well, let's take a rocket. And the first thing with a rocket, you have a stick. A stick doesn't do any good whatsoever. It's simply there to put it in the tube, so you direct it up in the air. Then you've got that little fuse that you light. And then as you light that fuse, it then goes into that tube. Inside that tube is what we call is gunpowder. And the way gunpowder works is that when it burns, it produces a lot of gas. Thrust, and the gas goes downwards and therefore the rocket goes upwards. But inside that cardboard tube, it's not just full of gunpowder, so it burns like a cigarette going through it. You've got to get a lot of oomph at the very beginning to get the rocket off the ground. So they normally put a hole up in the middle of the gunpowder. So when you burn it, the flame not only goes on the surface, it shoots up the middle of the tube, so you get a really large surface area which burns. And therefore, you get enough thrust that lifts the rocket up into the sky. And then when it's at the top of its trajectory, on top of the tube is like a nozzle, and in that nozzle is your payload. So if you want colour, there'll be some pellets, and let's say you want red colour, the pellets will contain strontium and some other materials, and when that burns, it will burn with a red flame. If you want bangers, sometimes they go bang, 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 bang. Inside those nozzles at the top, there'll be very small cardboard tubes, and inside those cardboard tubes will be flash powder. And it's like, you know, when you blow up and you hit a paper bag, it goes bang. It's the same thing inside these cardboard tubes. As the flash powder's burning, it ruptures the cardboard tube and it produces the bang. And also you sometimes see white flashes as well. So that's how you get the bangs. And also you can get different colors. I said strontium does red, barium will do green, copper, if you have copper in your pellets, they will burn with a blue flame. Sodium will burn with a yellow flame, and you get sparks. Could be aluminium, could be magnesium, and sometimes you get sparks that when they burn, they're white sparks that have this crackle sound. That will be titanium metal in the firework. So this is all payload on the top of it.
Right. Well, that seems relatively straightforward in terms of design, but if you were aiming to build something a bit more oomph, say, like a bomb or a missile, without giving too much away that you obviously can't, how do you go about doing that?
Okay, well, I'm a chemist, so I'm only really involved in the materials that go bang. I'm not a guided weapon. So we say missiles, a huge thing. But generally speaking, some type of shell that goes forward, you have something to move it forward. So in the shell, there would be an igniter. So when you either put electrical current on it, if something's got to ignite it, and it's generally done by an electrical current, and then that igniter would start, then would ignite the propellant, and the propellant will propel your shell forward. And so that moves it forward. And then, so as it's going, then it's going to hit the target. So at the top of the shell, you would have some type of explosive, a high explosive. So when it hits the target, it could be a pin that pushes into the high explosive and initiates a high explosive. But as I said, when a pin hits a secondary explosive, it won't go off. So you have to have a very sensitive explosive at the top of the shell. So when it hits your target, it hits this very sensitive prime explosive that will initiate. And then as it initiates, it will burn and it will initiate to detonation. And then that will send a shockwave into your secondary explosive that does all the damage.
Right.
So sometimes we have more than one or two explosives. They're called an explosive train, because if you want the big explosive to go, you have to get the energy into it. So you have to have a few more explosives to get the energy into it.
In terms of nuclear, we're still okay to say this on the air, right?
Well, I'm not nuclear is I'm an explosive, so if you ask me about nuclear, that is a bit out of my field, because I don't do nuclear reactions, because don't get nuclear is not an explosive. I know it gives an explosion, but it's not a chemical reaction. Nuclear, it's fusion or fission of the atoms. It's an atomic type reaction, whereas chemical explosives is a simple chemical reaction. That's all it is.
This is a schoolboy question, but when you say a chemical reaction, what exactly is happening with the two chemicals?
Well, yes, there's various ways. There's one where you can mix two chemicals together. So you have a fuel, which, let's take gunpowder for instance, you have a fuel, which is carbon, and then you have, for this fuel to burn, it has to react with oxygen. So in gunpowder, the oxygen is supplied by another powder, which is generally potassium nitrate. And you mix these powders together. And so when you ignite it, the carbon it looks around for, and it takes the oxygen from the potassium nitrate and you end up with carbon dioxide. So as you produce the gases, your fuel has got to react with your oxidizer to give you the products. So in gunpowder, you're mixing two powders, but you can have a fuel air explosion where the fuel can be a liquid and then it gets oxygen from the air, and that will also be an explosion. So this is where you're mixing two materials together. But there are other explosives which are called molecular explosives. These ones, you don't mix them together. You physically synthesize a molecule, and on that molecule contains a fuel, your carbons, and it's also linked to your oxygens. For instance, like trinitrotoluene, TNT, that is what's known as a molecular explosive. And because there's no mixing, when you initiate that, the reaction is extremely fast, and it's much more powerful than gunpowder by mixing two components together. So there's molecular explosives, or there's like composition type explosives.
What about these liquid explosives that are such a worry for aviation authorities? When we next go on a plane, God knows when that's going to be. What is the worry? How dangerous are they? How easy are they to hide? How difficult are they to make?
Okay, you're now talking about homemade explosives. These are the type of the terrorists. Extremely dangerous. I can say very, the people who make them must be mad, because they are very volatile to handle. They're very sensitive to handling, so they can easily go off by impact. And so we tend to work with the detection of these type of explosives. So we've been working with a Newton grant in with a university in Colombia, and their terrorist type explosives are TNT. They use them as mount anti-personnel mines in Colombia, and obviously a lot of children and people were losing limbs because they're walking on these mines. So we were looking at, could we detect these type of terrorist mines using like a molecule that could detect it. So we do work in detection, and also we've worked with a European consortium looking at type of not only explosives, homemade explosives, but illicit drugs. We made a chip that contained lots of different polymers, and when the vapor of the explosive went over these polymers, they changed color, and that would detect an explosive. Not only would it detect an explosive, it would tell you actually what the explosive is. Wow. And it also could tell you what an illicit drug is. So we do a lot of work on detection, and people often bring their detectors to us, and we can make these type of explosives ultra pure if we want, and so we can test their detectors on homemade explosives.
What about dogs? Or I think I read something about bees in detecting explosives. Are they very good at that? Are they useful?
Yes. Okay. If we start with the bees, some years ago now, we had some people came to us and they claimed that their bees could detect explosives. And not only that, they were very quick to train, because it's like Pavlov's dogs. They would put a bit of honey, so when the bee could smell an explosive, they got a reward. And after a while, when they saw explosives, they put their head down and they got the reward, and they broke like a laser beam. So they brought it, and this worked perfectly. But then they ask us, they would like to know what the concentration was. Could the bees actually detect parts per billion, or maybe parts per million? So what we did, we synthesized explosives ultra pure, and then we looked at the concentration, and unfortunately the bees couldn't detect any of the explosives we made. And what we came to the conclusion was that the bees were not detecting the explosive, but it was the additives in the explosives, probably the byproducts of the manufacture of it.
Right.
So that was unfortunate, that part. But the dogs, we often make explosives for training dogs, and again, we have no idea why dogs are so good at detecting not only explosives, but they've got such a sensitive nose that they and when they're trained, and we can never ever imitate a dog. We've tried, but it's impossible. They've got too many senses in their nose. So when you do it mechanically, you probably can come up with about a quarter of the sense a dog can do. So you can never replace a dog.
I wanted to ask you, maybe it's a bit of a personal question, but Do you ever worry about being kidnapped? I mean, you work with these explosives. You have a great amount of knowledge. Is that something that you have worried about over your career?
Yes, if you're the first person who's ever asked me that question.
Really?
I've never thought of, because I believe that what we do is for the good. I mean, we've always looked at detection. We've always looked at making things safe to handle. And we're researchers. So we're always looking ahead into the future, the new things. So I've never thought of that. And I probably won't be much use to people, because I have my colleagues who know far more information than I do.
I see what you're doing, Jackie. That's an awful thing to do. If they disappear, your colleagues next week will know exactly who to blame.
I'm not.
Well, I wanted to finish on a question. I know you've fielded before, yeah. But it is one that begs an answer, and that is, when you work in an area where you are not subtly but directly involved in the manufacture of machines and objects that are intended to kill and hurt and destroy, how do you square that from an ethical point of view when it comes to your involvement?
Okay, yes, I've been asked this question before. And we're not a manufacturer of weapons, and we're not a manufacturer of explosives. That's an important point. We are researchers, so we make them on a tiny, tiny scale. And the research that we undertake is generally looking at safety, to make explosives safer to handle for the user, and detection as well. So we're more on that side than making weapons whatsoever. We have to make explosives to do that research, but the outcome wouldn't actually be to make weapons, if you see what I mean. It's actually understanding how explosives actually work. So I don't think the people who manufacture weapons could care how they work. We do, because we're the scientists, and we'd like to understand it fully. But the manufacturers, probably they just want it to work rather than understanding the fundamentals.
Well, in fairness, of course, explosives are used in lots of other industries beyond war, like construction and so on. But I felt it was a question I sort of had to ask. It's been fascinating to speak with you, Professor Jacqueline Akavin from Cranfield Defence and Security. Thank you very much.
My utmost pleasure. Thank you very much.